This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Pope talks economics in some surprising new ways. Happy Thanksgiving from Marketplace in New York. I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio. Heavy rain in Kenya did not stop tens of thousands of people from packing the streets of Nairobi to see Pope Francis celebrate an open-air mass. It's part of a six-day tour that'll include stops in Uganda and the Central African Republic. He's expected to speak about climate change and poverty, issues he has made central to his papacy. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports that the Pope's visit could tackle other economic issues as well.
Pope Francis used his first stop in Nairobi to warn of the grave environmental crisis of climate change. Adjoa Animadu researches East Africa for the UK think tank Chatham House.
Kenya's really been at the forefront of development of renewable energy in the region and is doing a lot of work, particularly on geothermal and wind energy.
Animadu says the Pope's emphasis on the poor will resonate in Kenya as well, because despite sustained economic growth,
it still does have a significantly poor population, particularly in rural areas.
And she says corruption is a significant factor. Temple University's Leonard Swidler studies how Catholic messages play out in different cultures. He says the Pope should use the attention of African leaders to challenge corruption.
It just permeates the whole of the economic system, and it's like throwing sand into the gears.
The Pope asked Kenya's leaders to work with integrity and transparency for the common good. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Roasted turkeys will sit at the center of Thanksgiving meals around the country today. The birds will be carved up, forcing a choice upon diners: white meat or dark. This is also a non-trivial question for an entire industry, one that involves science, globalization, and economics. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour explains.
Thanksgiving divides us into two camps: lovers of dark meat and lovers of white meat. I am in the dark meat category.
Well, you're in the minority.
Thomas Elam is president of Farm Econ.
And we in the turkey industry appreciate your taste for dark meat, because it's a product that we wish we could sell more of.
But dark meat's time has come. Oh, yes, it has. Because right now, the price of white meat is surging.
Turkey breast meat now twice its normal level.
The price of dark meat, on the other hand, has fallen dramatically. Why? Bird flu. It skipped over Thanksgiving turkeys, but it hit the turkeys used for parts and meat hard. David Harvey is with the USDA.
Bird flu had two big impacts. One was a reduction in the quantity of birds available for sale.
Fewer birds, less meat, more expensive. That explains the white meat prices. Bird flu's second impact?
The number of countries banned importation of U.S. poultry products.
Countries that normally buy our unwanted dark meat. Without them, tons of glorious dark meat stayed home, deliciously driving down the price. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up in global trading. In Germany, shares up 1.6%. In the UK, up 0.6%. And in France, up 1.2%. Asian markets closed mixed. Wall Street, of course, takes a break for Thanksgiving. Yesterday, the last full day of trading this week. Stocks didn't move all that much. The S&P 500 closed just a hair below where it started, at 2088. The Dow barely moved, finishing up just a notch at 17,813. And the NASDAQ closed up 0.25% at 5116. Thanksgiving can be more challenging than ever as American eating habits change. These days, home cooks have to beware those friends or relatives who have very rigid opinions about what everyone in their orbit should cook and eat. You know the type: pacing around your kitchen, frisking your ingredients to make sure you meet their high standards for local or organic or ethical or whatever their concern is this year. Genetically modified foods and questions of how and whether to label them are hot topics at the moment. Some people think non-GMO foods are produced with fewer synthetic pesticides and are better from the environment. But as Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports, there's no guarantee that's the case.
Critics of genetically engineered crops, like Megan Westgate of the non-GMO group, often bring up the weed killer glyphosate.
A lot of people are worried about that.
A genetic tweak can make crops tolerate glyphosate. That means farmers can apply it and only kill the weeds, not the crops themselves. But there is a problem with weeds growing resistant to glyphosate. Farmers may then have to use additional herbicides.
So that means there's a lot more toxic chemicals going on to our food and soil and water.
The truth is a lot more complicated.
You really have to look at each crop and its cropping system on a case-by-case basis.
Gregory Jaffe is with the Center for Science in the Public Interest. He says while herbicide use has increased with soybeans, that hasn't happened with corn. He says GMO corn has actually helped lower the use of synthetic chemicals that kill insects. I asked Jaffe, begged him, really, to boil it all down. On net, do GMOs use more or fewer synthetic chemicals than non-GMOs? He says it's just not that simple.
The short answer is it depends.
And it's important to note that the world of non-GMOs is not exactly the Garden of Eden. Mac Earhart, a seed dealer in Minnesota, knows this. I reached him by phone while he was at work. What's that sound in the background?
Somebody working, pouring seeds into a Pro Box.
His company, Albert Lee Seed House, sells corn and soybeans with and without GMO traits. And guess what a farmer will do with the non-GMO seeds? Earhart says probably spray the crops with synthetic pesticides.
Consumers that are buying non-GMO food, I think, are under the misimpression that it automatically means there's a net environmental benefit. And I don't believe that that's necessarily true.
Earhart says in some cases, farmers might use fewer chemicals. But the label non-GMO doesn't mean no pesticides. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.